Radio Ghana.
Good evening and welcome to Behind the News, our news and current affairs program which examines issues from the perspectives of newsmakers and experts. My name is Agatha Samoa, and tonight, Electoral Commission says there are adequate checks and balances to prevent double registration in biometric registration. What is expected of all Ghanaians to ensure a smooth exercise? What does Ghana have to show for the development of women as the country joins the rest of the world tomorrow to celebrate women? And NHIA suspends its nationwide strike. What informed that decision? Can the workers and management reach a consensus this time? You can also join in the discussion by sending your comments on 0264-418767. 0264-418767. This is Behind the News. When the Electoral Commission announced its plan to introduce biometric voters register for this year's elections, some political parties raised concerns with the exercise. In barely 2 weeks, the registration exercise will begin, and the chairman of the EC, Dr. Akweja Afrejan, has given the assurance that the necessary checks will be put in place to ensure credibility of the program. He said the issue of verification has been taken on board. He said this at a seminar on biometric system in Accra. Now let's go to the phone lines and talk to the acting director of public affairs of the EC, Christian Owusu-Parry. Good evening, sir.
Good evening.
To begin with, how is the EC's training of registration of officials?
Thank you very much. The commission has already started training the officials that will be used for the biometric voter registration beginning the 24th of March. Indeed, there are various categories of officials to be trained. And we started the training of the officials that will train the data entry clerks sometime last week. We have finished with the training of the trainers for the officials, and we are beginning the next phase of training for all categories of officials. And if I say all categories of officials, we're referring to registration officers and assistant registration officers, and then registration assistants. Their training will begin this Saturday. We're going to train the trainers, and then the trainers will go and train the grassroots officials from next week, Tuesday. So the commission is ready, and we have put in place a program for the training of these officials.
Have there been any challenges with regards to the training?
Well, the only category of officials we have trained so far are the key trainers for the data entry class, the officials that are going to work with the biometric equipment. We didn't have any difficulty in training the key trainers of those who are going to work on the equipment, because they already have some knowledge of IT. They are mostly experts in the field, and so there wasn't much difficulty training them. We have been so careful in recruiting the data entry clerks. They were all taken through some tests, and we are quite certain that they have some kind of skills in the use of the computers and the equipment. So we believe that it wouldn't be too difficult training them to acquire the skills in handling this particular equipment that we're going to use for the voter registration.
Earlier in the day, the chairman of the EC, Dr. Afrejan, says measures are being put in place to check double registration. What exactly are these measures?
Yes, the software that has been designed for the biometric voter registration is so designed that if you register at a registration center and you go back to the same registration center a few days later, the equipment is automatically able to detect that your fingerprint is already in the database and will indicate that you are already registered with that center or on that particular equipment. And let us remember that every equipment will be used to handle 4 registration centers. In other words, one of the equipment will be deployed to 4 registration centers. So if you register in any of the 4 polling stations in that cluster that is handled by that equipment, the device will automatically detect that you have already registered. However, if you go out of your electoral area or cluster to some other center, let's say you register first time in Accra and then you go to some other region to register, the equipment will not immediately detect that you have registered in Accra. But there is a second phase of the verification, that is the matching. That will be the application of the IFES system, which will be matching of all fingerprints in the database to see those who have done double registration. And when we come to that stage, all who endured the multiple registrations will be detected.
Mr. Parry, with regard to the pilot exercise that took place, were there any cases of double registration?
Yes, there were cases of double registration. And most of the cases of double registration were deliberate, just because the equipment, to be sure that indeed if people indulge in double registration, the device can detect that double registration.
So what role is expected of citizens who are qualified to register now?
We have always maintained that the equipment cannot tell a minor from an adult, and at the same time, it is incapable of determining who is a Ghanaian citizen. And so we will require the vigilance of every Ghanaian to ensure that people who do not qualify to register as voters do not by any means find their way onto the voters register. Because the people who live in the communities know each other, we are asking them to be very vigilant. So if they find cases of minors trying to go through the process, they have to bring it to the attention of the registration officers, and then the necessary action will be taken. So also, do they know who is a foreign national in the community? And they are the ones that can alert the Electoral Commission so that foreign nationals would not be put on our voters' roll. Apart from that, we expect that everybody should show interest in the exercise so that when the registration team is at their centers, they will come out in their numbers and apply for registration. Let us remember that the teams will be at the various centers for only 10 days. So if somebody does not take advantage of the 10 days that the team will be at the registration center, he may not have another opportunity to put his name on the voters register.
All right, just hold the line. We have a political scientist, Dr. Kwesi Jonah, on the line. Good evening, Mr. Jonah.
Good evening.
And what is your response to what Mr. Parry has been saying?
I didn't hear everything, but I think the bit that I heard is absolutely correct. The machine, the equipment that we are going to use for biometric registration can do only so much. It can prevent multiple registration by individuals, but there are other things that it cannot do. It cannot detect, for example, underage registration. It cannot detect alien registration. Somebody is not a Ghanaian, it comes to register. And so that is why we should consider the biometric registration exercise to be a shared responsibility. It is not just the EC, the responsibility of the EC. It is the responsibility of political parties or society organizations, of every patriotic Ghanaian to ensure that the exercise is a success by pointing out people who are not qualified to register but who try to register, by pointing out, for example, aliens who are not qualified to register as voters under our laws and try to register. So I agree entirely with everything he has said. We need to be vigilant in order to ensure that this new thing which we are introducing into our electoral system is very, very successful.
It's barely 2 weeks to the exercise, and we've not seen much of publicity. So how would you describe publicity for such a major exercise like this?
But it is not the EC alone that should be doing the publicity. The media should also be doing publicity. You, how much publicity have you done? The media should also be publicizing the exercise for everybody to know that the media has a responsibility, civil society organizations have a responsibility, EC has a responsibility, FCC also has a responsibility. It does not rest, the responsibility does not rest only with the EC. That's why I call it a shared responsibility.
Ms. Ajuna, with regard to education, what we are doing now is also educating the public.
Yes. So, you are doing something. Let all other media houses, let all civil society organizations, let all of them also do their bit. The responsibility does not lie on the shoulders of the EC alone.
So, in effect, what you are saying, the media should do much publicity.
IDEC should do more. NCC should do more. All of us should contribute to educating the Ghanaian people about this new system.
Now, on the issue of verification and double registration, what do you expect the EC to do?
I think the procedures are very, very clear. The kind of equipment they are using will be able to detect multiple registration. In fact, on the spot. In fact, during the pilot, you know that the EC itself simulated double registration, multiple registration. In other words, the EC deliberately asked people who are registered to go and register again. The chairman of the EC, for example, asked his driver to do more, to see if the machine will be able to detect, and the machine was able to detect. There are two levels at which multiple registration can be detected. At the original level, then when all the data has been sent to national level, they will also be able to detect if people have done even multiple registrations across constituencies and regions. So we should educate people that we now have in our hands equipment that can detect multiple registrations. So it is not worth your time at all to try to register two times, three times, and so on and so forth.
All right. Many thanks for joining us. That was a political scientist, Mr. Kwesi Juna. Now, back to you, Mr. Parry. How are you intensify publicity for the exercise?
Thank you very much. We have started doing some intensive public education. So far, we have limited our education to appearance on radio and on television. And over the last 2 weeks, we've made a couple of appearances on some national networks. But we are not going to limit it to only radio and television. We have a plan to visit institutions.
Hello, Mr. Parry. Hello, could you please reduce the volume of your radio, please?
I don't have a radio on at all.
Okay, then go ahead.
Yes, as I was saying, we are going to visit the state. And already we have visited a couple of churches, and applications, requests keep coming for some of the commission to come and do education in some of the churches. We'll visit the mosque, we'll go to the marketplaces, and we will also have face-to-face interaction with identifiable bodies. For this reason, we have engaged what voter educators or public educators. We are establishing one voter educator for every electoral area in this country. It means that we are deploying over 6,000 educators to the various communities to do one-on-one education, face-to-face interaction with people, so that by the time we start the actual registration exercise in March, people will be very, very knowledgeable as to what the biometric registration is about and what you require to be able to take part in the process.
All right. Many thanks for joining us. That was the Acting Director of Public Affairs of the EC, Christian Owusu-Parry. Public education is a major component for the success of national exercises like voter registration. Eric Borte is the Eastern Regional Director of the National Commission for Civic Education. Thanks for your time. Will you say NCC officials have been well schooled on the biometric exercise?
Thank you very much for the opportunity to. Since last December, we started, with the help of the EC, learning about the whole process. And by the second week of January, almost all district directors of the National Commission for Civic Education have been trained. In my region, EC region, we have 21 districts, and all the district directors were trained. Then we had a second training where it was training of trainers, where we were the resource persons, captured the most essential aspects of the training, what the people should know. And then we went ahead and trained two more from each of the districts. As we talk, our first target was the schools, because you know very soon they'll be going on Easter break. So we targeted them and then went to the communities, religious bodies and all that. Each district is by the count of by last Friday, each district had done no less than 70 programs. That is either communities, schools, or religious or faith-based organizations have been visited, each district in the Eastern region.
So how has been the response of the people to your education?
Basically, if you look at what we have gone through before and what we are going to do now, the process is the same. It's just that there is biographic and biometric capture of people. That is biographic, where your date of birth, your father's name, your house number, the general behavioral pattern of each individual, and then the specific natural or biological look, that is the biometric. So the application enters up to where your picture is taken or where the biometric and the biographic features are taken, and then getting your picture. This one, the EC tells us there's no receipts to go and come. Like they say here, so you just get it and go. We also make people aware that, look, after the process, all the data will be fed into a master computer, which will do what they describe as adjudication or something. And all those who are registered twice or multiple registration will be found out, just as the EC chairman said. Now, if such a person is found out, note that you have given us your address and all those things, your father's name, your this. So we can even use your address to come and capture you. The other aspect of it is that people should know that once you are detected, that you have done multiple registration and apprehended, there's a penalty for it. You may be barred from taking part in any future elections. You may be imprisoned. You may be fined in terms of monetary fining. So the people have been very receptive of it. Tomorrow, for instance, I have a session with the Ascension Presbyterian Church here in Kofre Edua. Then there's another one with teachers, something. There's a teacher school, a training school, where we are also going. We have hit the ground. The only problem we have, as usual, NCC, is how to move about frequently and to all the people. So the response has been very good. Everybody has been eager to hear what is biometric registration. And we try to disaggregate the issues. It is not biometric elections or biometric voting. We are just taking the issues one after the other. The final decision will come from the EC, but we are doing biometric registration.
All right.
That is
all
what
right.
We are emphasizing.
Thanks for your time. That was Eric Borte, the Eastern Regional Director of the National Commission for Civic Education. President Mills and his U.S. counterpart Barack Obama will this week discuss issues of mutual concern to the two countries. President Mills, we gathered, has just arrived to begin his visit to the U.S. Our correspondent with the president is Seth Iya. Many thanks for joining us, Seth.
Thank you, Agatha.
What can you tell us about the visit so far?
Well, Agatha, what I can tell you is that President Mills has indeed arrived, but we are waiting for him at the Blair House, where he will be staying for today. The Blair House is opposite the White House, and from where I am standing, we've been checked. All the people from Ghana who have something to do with the president's visit have gone through the necessary security checks, and we are waiting in front of the Blair House to welcome President Mills.
So how is the Ghanaian community preparing to meet the president?
Yes, the security situation over here is very strict, but there are a few number of them. If you are not on the official list, you are not supposed to be closer to the president. But let me say that today, President Mills, arriving, will be meeting the IFF president, Christian Lagarde, for a meeting. Then tomorrow, there will be another meeting. The president will go and lay a wreath at the Arlington Cemetery, where the place for war heroes in America. Yeah, then from there, President Mills will go to the White House, where he will meet President Barack Obama at the Oval Office, and the two of them will discuss, the bilateral relations between Ghana and the U.S. Then from there, there will be a series of meetings that the president will be undertaking. For tomorrow, Friday, the meeting will continue. The president will be meeting some congressmen. Then in the evening, President Mills will be meeting the Ghanaian community. Yes, so if they are not able to meet him here, there's a program that the president will be meeting them at the Ghana Embassy in Washington here. Then on Saturday, President Mills, will meet Ghana's ambassador, Daniel Hinejekum, at a luncheon. So, Agatha, in a summary, this will be the itinerary as president's program. But as the details unfold, I'll be giving it to you in Ghana.
Thank you very much for joining us. That was our presidential correspondent, Seth Iya, who is in the U.S. You are live on Behind the News, and these are some of your text messages. Nicholas Esiedu from Chinchinku says all Ghanaians are to help the EC in this biometric registration for the smooth running of the upcoming elections. Jefferson Saki, Roman Ridge, Behind the News is a great program, but can you folks create Facebook and Twitter pages to expand the platform for interaction with your listeners? And the public need massive education and training before the takeoff of this biometric registration. From Jeremiah, we will be live on Behind the News. And this is also live on all our regional FM stations across the country. As the world observes yet another International Women's Day tomorrow, we ask whether we have really made a headway in attending to the needs of women in Ghana. We have on the line Angela Dramnabwade, Executive Director, ARC Foundation, to speak to us on the issue. Good evening, madam. Would you say we've done enough in empowering the Ghanaian women?
Well, we've done some things, but as to whether it's enough, that one is up for grabs, because the world over, in fact, even though many of the countries, particularly in the Scandinavian area, have actually reached a certain modicum of gender equality and women's empowerment, there is no society in this world in which women and men, have the same advantages, and women are not discriminated against one way or the other. And so I would say that for Ghana, we've done some things, but we're really falling short of some of the targets that we were supposed to have reached by now.
Can you share with us what exactly we have done?
Well, some of the things that I know has been done, for example, is that we have a very good policy and legislative framework, generally speaking, for women's empowerment and gender equality. We have several laws on our statute books. We have reformed many of the archaic laws. We now have Human Trafficking Act, Domestic Violence Act. We have conventions that we have signed on and ratified, like the CEDAW Convention, all the AU declarations on gender and women we have acceded to. So in terms of framework, our very constitution is a constitution that promotes gender equality and women's rights. It has some gaps, yes, but on the whole, it's a pretty progressive constitution compared to many other countries. So legislative frameworks, policy frameworks, we have a good thing going for Ghana. We also have been able to address a certain level of poverty in the country. You know, women form a majority of the poor of this nation. But if you look at the fact that we've been able to reverse some of the poverty trends, it also means that women have benefited from the reversal of poverty trends through microcredit, augmenting their subsistence farming, things like that. Also on women's education, for example, we know that we have reached parity when it comes to enrollment of girls and boys. In fact, you find that in some instances, even girls outnumber boys when it comes to enrollment. So we've been able to do something on that front.
But these policies that you are talking about, it appears they only remain on paper.
Well, not really. If you look at enrollment, it doesn't remain on paper. The truth is that we have actually exceeded our targets in terms of parity for girls and boys at enrollment at primary level. But when it comes to retention of females, we know that for sociocultural reasons, many more females are, you know, not able to be retained when it comes to males, when it comes to education. So you see, some of the things are not, they have gone beyond paper, but we have not done enough. Affirmative action, for example, is still something that we have not worked on, even though we've had a policy guideline for years. And you see the dwindling numbers of women in decision-making in this country. And that's also something that really undermines our democratic credentials as a country. So, yes, some of it is on paper, some of it is actual, but we have a long way to go.
Over the years, we've been celebrating International Women's Day. How significant is the day for women?
Well, it is a recognition that women too matter, that women are supposed to be full citizens of their country and equal world citizens. It's a recognition that women have worked within their countries to support not only their families, but national institutions. They have contributed to the labor front. They have contributed to the welfare of society generally. So it's a very significant day for women. It's like a birthday, if you like, or, you know, a Christmas day or something, where you celebrate something that's significant. And the world is saying, look, we do recognize that we have women and women do matter. However, the flip side of it is also a sober reminder of the fact that women have not been treated fairly across the ages. There's been discrimination, there has been marginalization, there has been exclusion, and there has been abuse when it comes to being compared to men generally across the world. So it's a very significant celebration.
We have identified social cultural system and structures as hindering efforts to improve on the lot of women. How have we fared?
Well, when it comes to the sociocultural issues, I think that's where our greatest burden is. The reason being that, you see, our culture is largely patriarchal. And patriarchal means that there's a certain acceptance that men are the leaders, men should have the privileges and advantages and the power and autonomy and independence and all that. And these things are not given to women in equal measure or sometimes not at all. So with that acceptance, that has also become part of our culture, even though there are several aspects of our culture that also, you know, sort of promotes respect for womanhood, especially in terms of being a mother, you know, a gatekeeper of tradition. Beyond that, there isn't a lot that is done for women when it comes to sociocultural issues, particularly in the way we view them, in the way we treat them, and in the way in which we enable resources to also reach them. So our greatest, I think, as a country, is the fact that we carry these cultural norms, values, and beliefs that have been imbibed over a long period of time, and it's affecting all our institutions in the way in which we handle and address women's issues.
Briefly, before I let you go, it is often said women are their own enemies. Are we?
Well, sometimes you'd wish that in a year like 2012, you wouldn't hear these things being said. But it's very unfortunate that, you know, people continue to believe these things. Being somebody's enemy is a human problem. From, you know, the ages past, men have been enemies to men. Men have been enemies to women. Women to women. Children to children. You know, it's a human problem. We keep insisting. It's not a woman peculiar problem. In many, many, many areas, women have formed solidarities and have fought for different aspects of their lives. You know, some of us have been mentored by many women. We stand on the shoulders of women who went ahead of us. And if you find women, you know, opposing other women in certain sectors and so on, you should understand why that happens. It's something that we need to understand.
Many thanks for joining us, and we wish you the best as we celebrate International Women's Day tomorrow. That was Angela Dramnabwade, Executive Director, ARC Foundation, focusing on the Connecting Girls, Inspiring Futures, Reducing Rural Poverty. Adolf Bequin is also a gender activist. Many thanks for joining us, Mr. Bequin.
Hello, good evening.
Good evening. How would you describe efforts to empower women here in Ghana?
Well, I think that we have had many successes, but the sad story is that we still have a long way to go. There have been remarkable improvement, yet the story, you have very interesting stories in between, and yet my candid opinion is that we still have a long way to go to really get there.
What, in your opinion, can we do to make life meaningful for the Ghanaian woman?
I think we need to be more concrete in terms of what we want to do. It is not women's problem. It is human problem. It is national problem. And each and everyone is affected one way or the other by a woman's problem, quote unquote. So if we could get to a stage where we appreciate that it is our problem. It is not women who have gotten their peculiar problem that we're asking them to do for all of us to be spectators, but that we are all active participants in resolving whatever difficulties women confront. Then we'll be making a headway. As it is, it's like, this is women's problem, and so women should come together and do their own thing while the rest of society look on. That is not, for me, the best way to handle issues like this.
So the theme for this year is Empower Rural Women, End Hunger and Poverty. So how do we advance rural women's status to end poverty?
We need to expand opportunities for literacy across board and rural communities. We need to provide services. Of course, if you take rural communities as being marginalized and deprived from so many amenities, the women suffer the most because here you are talking about double marginalization for women. If rural communities are marginalized, then it means that being a woman and living in a rural community means you're experiencing double jeopardy. What I think should be done is to open up rural communities, using innovative means to make sure that services reach rural women. It's incredible and it's pathetic that in this day and age, we still have high rate of maternal mortality and rural women suffer the most. On all the indicators that women suffer, rural women suffer the most. So our challenge, I think the theme is appropriate. that once you are born in a rural area as a woman, you don't get lost in the system, but rather interventions are put in place to enable you realize your potential. Because when a woman realizes her potential, it is society that benefits.
Gender issues are often perceived to be for women. Is that the case, and what is the role of men in this case?
I think that is an erroneous impression. It is not women. It is relation among the sexes, how society has constructed relationships between us. So it is the two of us in it together. The situation where it is termed women issue and all that, we should move far away from there. Men are partners in everything that women do. They are mothers, they are wives, they are daughters, we are their children. And so we are in it together. And it is important that to make the strides that we have to make as a society, we must focus on the two. Men must be critical stakeholders in resolving all the inequalities that women go through. Because in their peace, we have our peace.
All right. Thanks for your time. That was a gender activist, Adolf Bequin. As the world celebrates women tomorrow, Oxfam Ghana is asking whether the right platforms have been created for women to access the many opportunities to improve their lot. On the line to share some thoughts on women issues is the Health Advocacy Manager of Oxfam Ghana, Mrs. Rosemary Akola. Many thanks for your time. You have concerns about how, as a country, you have not collectively created the relevant platform for women to unleash their potential. What exactly do you want us to focus on?
Thank you very much for calling me and asking me my views on what is happening in terms of women and their potential, as well as women and health. Particularly, I would want us to focus on women, their potentials, and their access to health in this country.
And what exactly are you talking about?
I just want to bring us back to the fact that everybody talks about universal access to healthcare in this country. The MDGs are there because we all know this Millennium Declaration talks about a lot of things, and almost 90% of what is embedded in the declaration, it's about health and education. And we know that the most deprived group are the rural folks. They are very, very deprived in this situation.
Hello, Mrs. Akola.
Hello.
Can you reduce the volume of your radio? It's giving us a feedback.
Okay, give me a second.
All right. This is Behind the News, and it's live on all our regional FM stations across the country.
Hello?
Yes, you can go ahead now.
Okay. So I was talking about access to health, especially to the rural women in Ghana. Particularly, we all believe and know that access to health is the number one thing that everybody in this country needs. And our women are the most deprived people in this country. And as I was saying, the rural folks do not have access. Adolf just said it, that they are the people who are suffering most. Angela also mentioned it, that the rural folks are most deprived. When you go to a rural sector now, women are dying. Is this what we want as a country? We want to stay as selfish people within the urban centers and forget about the people in the rural areas. And when it's time for politics, we are there asking them to give us their vote, and then we'll bring them this, we'll bring them that. After they vote for us, we forget about them. How on earth in the Volta region would you have to put pregnant women in a basin to cross a river to go and deliver? Hello?
Hello, I'm listening.
Yes. Today, Ghana is 55 years. And yet we still put pregnant women in labor, in a basin to cross a river to go and deliver. And yet, everywhere in the world, when our politicians and our leaders go and sit around the table, they say, Ghana is making it, Ghana is making it.
So how do we mobilize these women so that their voices can be heard and help make positive changes in their communities?
It is not that easy. Why do I say it's not easy? Our women have been given the opportunity, but they don't have the capacity. Angela said there are a lot of policies, a lot of treaties we have signed on as a government, as a country, that is limited. We don't have the diffusion capacity to really diffuse this information to the rural folks. Sometimes we come on air and then we speak about big things and confuse these poor rural folks. They don't understand anything. So when we go to them, we confuse them and they just say, hey, which is very unfortunate. But I think that the easiest way is for us to really go down to the communities, get the community involvement right from the policy developmental stage. Ask these people, what are their needs? What do they want? You know, they may say that, yes, do we think they are not technocrats? They know what they are doing and they have been doing it.
How should we do it then?
We must do it properly because we don't have to just call the opinion leaders, a few people, put them around the table, and then at the end of the day, we sign and say civil society communities were contacted. It is just not right. We need to involve the community people and involve them well. We need to invest in involving them. We shouldn't sit in the cities in the air-conditioned room, and then make policies for the people on the ground. And when one wants to talk, they say that you don't understand. Simply because these people were born with spoons, silver spoons in their mouth, they don't know what these rural folks are going through. They need to be sent there. They need to identify with the people. When you are making a policy, you should develop a policy that has context. It should link with the people, with the culture, so that the people will benefit. You don't just dance to the tune of the dancing tone of politicians and leaders and developed countries because they want you to do this. Our politicians need to be there for us, not for themselves. Now, I'll give you an example in a few districts. There's a project going on where we go to the communities, put together community health volunteers. These people are trained by the community health workers to go from door to door and educate the people what to do when they are pregnant. And they have to go to the clinic. We've given them some mobile phones. So when they are in labor, they call the traditional birth attendant that is very close to them. Then they will lead them from their place to the clinic. Sometimes the distance is so far that before they get there, something has happened. And when we have this TBA among them, sometimes the TBAs are able to salvage the situation. They would bring the baby out and then reach the clinic with the mother and child.
If you have your way, come next year's celebration, what should we say have been the greatest achievement?
In fact, what we should say will be the greatest achievement is maternal death reducing drastically to, let me say, even 0%. There's no reason why a woman should go to deliver and then lose her life or lose the baby's life. That is one. We need to bring facilities closer to the doorsteps of these people. We need to let community members be involved. There are so many barriers. We have the financial barrier. We have the cultural barrier. But the most important thing is for us to do our part, educate them, construct our road networks, for God's sake. We give contracts to people who are not contractors. They'll do shabby work. The next heavy rain, everything is washed away. Please, let's not juggle with people's lives, because I will always say that we'll come back to pay for the lives that are lost because of people cheating and making sure that things are not properly done. I'm sorry for that statement, but that is the truth. One thing I will want to say is that Ghana, as it stands, have given a lot of opportunities. to our women. They've come out with several policies. They've signed up to several treaties. They have, this domestic violence bill has been passed. And I think more and more women are beginning to understand that they have some space. They also have a voice. But there are a few gaps that I've identified that I think it's important that we as Ghanaians will try to address. And come next year, we should be able to say that, yes, we are celebrating Women's Day because we have been able to fill in these gaps. And I would want us to look at the assertiveness of women. Even though these platforms have been created for us and the opportunities are there, that you can see everywhere in adverts. There's no advert that they would include women are encouraged to apply.
So what activities have been lined up as part of tomorrow's celebration?
Please, can I would want to just tell you this, that these two gaps are very, very important. The assertiveness of women, I think that women, we need to build our capacity to be assertive. Because you give a woman a position, the woman doesn't still have enough courage to be more assertive, to do what she's supposed to do. You know, we need to still build our capacity in terms of that. The second gap that I have seen, it's the involvement and inclusiveness of our men. Because most of our men are very supportive, but I'm telling you, the larger population are not so supporting women, and it doesn't encourage our colleague women to take up challenging jobs. A job that is involving, involves a lot of traveling, the woman will...
All right, you have to be rounded up now. Briefly, what activities have been lined up for tomorrow, briefly?
Well, tomorrow we will want to go around and interview a few queen mothers, market women, who also go to hospital facilities, just on the media tour to find out how people are assessing the health facilities in our country, the difficulties they are facing, especially women. And also, we would want to walk around some principal streets just to demonstrate and celebrate women.
I believe you've been doing it over the years. How significant is this?
This is quite different because we want to hear the voices. We want the women themselves to come out from the ground to tell us this is what we think we want from our government. This is one come next year we want to see. It shouldn't come from those of us who have been doing it over the years.
All right. Many thanks for joining us. That was the health advocacy manager of Oxfam Ghana, Mrs. Rosemary Akola. You are listening to Behind the News. And these are some of your text messages. The EC is on course. They should be supported by all Ghanaians. The army and the security services are ready for this election, Dela Kumasi. Ghanaians must vote for Professor Mills to continue his good works. Elvis, Jebeni Volta region. I hope the EC will work on schedule to ensure a peaceful registration. That's from Born Again, Kitikrachi. And Baba Musa UDS says the MPP should stop raising red flags over business allegations in relation to the military contingent at the march powers. The National Labour Commission has directed workers of the National Health Insurance Authority to suspend their intended strike since their action contravenes the labour law. But are the workers going to heed to this directive? Ahmed Okwame is the Deputy Director of Strategy and Corporate Affairs of the NHIA. Good evening and thanks for your time.
Good evening.
How did you receive the NLC directive?
The directive by the National Labour Commission was in the right direction. We have said all along that the purported strike action by the unionized workers of the national insurance schemes across the country was illegal and was completely needless because we were still at the negotiating table and resolving the issues that were under discussion. So it's a very welcome decision by the Labour Commission.
So now that they've asked the workers to get back to the negotiating table, are you ready to engage with the workers?
Indeed, even today, the 7th of March, we should have met. But because we have complained to the National Labour Commission, we had to call off that meeting. And therefore, we are ready to engage them.
What exactly were the concerns of the workers?
Well, I think that this question would have been best answered by the workers' union themselves.
We've been trying
to... The issues on the table were conditions of service. Since 2008, persistently, every year, they've been giving salary increments. What was being discussed now were conditions of service. They had put forward 48 issues. 46 of them had been resolved, left with only two issues which were being resolved. So there was no reason absolutely for them to begin to embark on industrial action.
We were trying to get hold of Amos Yamwa, who is the national chairman of the NHIS Workers Union. He promised to talk to us, but he's not picking his line. But if he's saying that you've been increasing their salary, so why are they still negotiating for another increment?
Well, the issue is not about increment to the best of my knowledge. The issue is about conditions of service. You see, I don't know if you have the time, but the structure of the National
Yes, you go ahead.
Team is a very complex one, as was designed under Act 650 of 2003. The district mutual health insurance schemes are almost autonomous institutions on their own. They were registered as institutions, you know, limited by guarantee, and had their own boards of directors. But when the NDC came to power in 2009 and the new administration came into office, it was realized that you can't run a national institution with such arrangements. So moves were started to have the whole institution, brought under one umbrella. The arrangements have gone very far. The new review of the law is in Parliament right now, and we are hoping that before Parliament rises for March this year, for the first quarter, they would have passed the law, which would then have unified the whole national health insurance scheme. So you find that each scheme has different conditions, as were provided them by their different boards. In 2009, there were 145 schemes. Right now we have 150 schemes. So you can't run a national institution with such an arrangement. And that is the reason why we have initiated legal review in order to unify. But before then, we started negotiating with them. This is the very, very first negotiation for conditions of service, which is going on. And we needed to be careful to lay the proper foundation so that we don't go about giving conditions of service which are not sustainable into the future. Again, management at each turn had to go back to the board to seek fresh mandate and to report to the board so far what we have done. We have done very well. We have resolved 46 of the 48 conditions that they have put on the table, and we are left with resolving the remaining two, which will then have concluded the whole collective bargaining arrangement. So it was really needless for them to have begun that industry.
So the remaining two, what are they about?
Well, they are about risk allowance and allowances that they have been arrogating to themselves under the old regime, which we think are not tenable under our unified system, because employees at the authority level do not enjoy such allowances. And if they are coming under the authority as a unified national scheme, then it was important that they do not enjoy such facilities which are not enjoyed by
Mr. Kwame, why are they untenable?
Because those conditions are not do not exist within the authority.
So briefly, how soon will the grievances of the workers be addressed?
As soon as we get back to the negotiating table.
All right. When?
When?
Yes, when exactly?
The Labour Commission has asked us to come back, I think, in 2 weeks' time. So within that period, I believe we will have met and we will report back to the Labour Commission the progress made during those 2 weeks' period.
All right. Many thanks for joining us.
You are welcome.
That was Ameto Kwame, who is the Deputy Director, Strategy and Corporate Affairs of the NHIA, and Amos Yamwa, who is the National Chairman of the NHIS Workers Union, promised to talk to us, but he isn't picking his call. And with that, we end tonight's edition of Behind the News. Our technician has been Joseph Darko. Production was by Bryce Agama, Phyllis Kofi, Christopher Esiedu, and John Toby. My summarizer was Abraham Donko. My name is Agatha Samoa, and good night.